welcome to pod 44 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grissom from Palace TV, which you can watch on the official Palace app, on YouTube, on eagles.cpfc.co.uk, and on all of our social media channels. This week, I'm recording these links from my very own home. I've just got back from the FA Youth Cup game, where the team beat Reading 4-2. It was actually an incredible game. So we will chat to a couple of people involved in that game later on in the pod. We'll chat to Paddy McCarthy, the post-match interview I did with him, and also Brandon Pierrick. We'll have Roy's press conference. We'll have Statman. But first of all, let's hear from James Tompkins, who is talking to Premier League Productions.
So, James, you had a run of three consecutive defeats, and then you've been unbeaten in your last three games. Where are Palace at the moment, do you think?
No, I think we're in a good place for sure. I think if you look at the points that we've got on the table so far, you know, it's a good reflection of how our season's going, really. You know, we're in the top half of the table, which is nice, but you know, it's obviously still such a long way to go until the end of the season. But you know, we had a good spell playing well against some good teams. You know, when we lost them three games you were talking about, there's some good teams there, and we were there or thereabouts. You know, we gave them a good game, really, all three of them. But you know, the results didn't really go our way, so it was important really to build some confidence from that going into the games obviously last week, where it was, you know, it was quite physically demanding, to be honest. And you know, we got through it well, really. Undefeated, like you said, two wins and a draw, which is pretty good.
Is there a sense around the club that you guys are proving people wrong? Mm. Because many had you down to struggle right at the beginning of the season. Has that been used as motivation?
Yeah, no, I wasn't really quite aware of what people thought our season was going to be. We had high expectations ourselves of, you know, where we wanted to be. You know, the target is, you know, to break into the top half if we can. And, you know, we don't try and look at, you know, obviously last season we fought long and hard, obviously, to keep ourselves up. And, you know, at the end of it, we did pretty well and a great job of it. But, you know, it's not where we obviously ideally want to be, and want to be in and around, you know, the half of the table. And you know, that's where we want to be. But we weren't aware of how our, you know, other people see our season going. We just expected high of ourselves, and, you know, we want to keep progressing.
The manager said today, isn't he, that you guys need to score more goals, and that's where, you know, one of the improvements need to come in going into 2020. But he said that defensively there's a real solid base there. Where have you improved defensively on last season?
I think, you know, the last few seasons defensively, I think we've been pretty solid. I think our team shape, you know, and the lads we got, you know, everyone puts in a shift. It's not just, you know, the back four and the keeper or anything like that. It's literally a collective thing. How hard we work as a team is so important for them clean sheets that we get. But, you know, like them clean sheets have been important for us. You know, we've had three in a row now, which is brilliant, really. And, you know, we know them goals will come.
And what has Gary Cahill brought to the party in terms of solidifying everything at the back for you guys?
You know, he brings a leadership about him, you know, coming from a top club. You know, he's got great experience. So he's only ever going to benefit us. So, you know, he's been good, and he's a good lad as well.
Usually you guys have not the greatest starts to the season, certainly in recent form, and then pick up second half. If you have one of those again, given where you are, this could be a season where you really surprise everyone.
Yeah, I think it is so important to keep it going. You know, in and around Christmas is such an important time of year, so many games, and, you know, if we can get our injuries back and, you know, keep performing on the pitch, then, you know, the season will go well for us. But it's, you can't just rely on what you've just done at the start of the season. It's so important to keep going right until the end.
Well, what is the target? We spoke to the manager beginning of the season, and everyone sort of put to him, look, top 10 has got to be realistic now, given that you've been hovering around there or thereabouts last few seasons. Is that, does it bother you? Do you think, oh, we need to be in the top 10?
No, I think it's important to have, you know, objectives for the season and goals, and I think that's probably one of our goals, you know, to break into that top 10. It still is, because we're in a good place at the moment, but, you know, depending on how our season goes after Christmas. You never know, see what happens. But it's still, yeah, still to be in the top 10, and that's important that we can try and do that, you know.
So you've got Brighton next, which is one of the more unusual derbies, isn't it, in the Premier League?
Yeah, no, I wasn't quite aware before I joined Palace of the derby, but you know, it's one that the fans are, you know, massively passionate about, and it brings a great atmosphere about it. You know, Monday night under the lights will be a good atmosphere, and it'll be a good game to play in. So we're looking forward to the game, and we know it's a massive one for everyone really at the club.
You've played in quite a few London derbies, haven't you, over your time, but what's this one like to play in? There's so much passion between these two sets of fans.
Yeah, no, it's just as passionate, you know. It means so much to the to the fans, you know. That's the first game they look for when they get their fixture list. So it's so important, and you know, Monday night is going to be a good game, tough game, and you know, saying that all players like playing in is derby. So.
And Roy's been talking about how the crowd can help Palace, not just in this derby, but going forward now, and particularly all the home games until the end of the season. Just tell everyone around the world watching what that Selhurst Park noise is like to play, and particularly in a game like this that's so brutal passion wise.
Yeah, no, it's unique, you know. And I was at West Ham before, and Upton Park had like a sense of, you know, a stadium being quite close to the ground and a good atmosphere. And Selhurst Park, yeah, it's one place I really like playing when I was against them, and Forum is even better, you know. It's just, you know, when you get that atmosphere and, you know, it's rocking, and it's quite unique really in terms of, you know, that the older sort of style stadiums, and it brings just such a great atmosphere that you can't really explain unless you've played in it really. You know, it's very, very special, special place to play.
It's going to be a special day for the manager as well, isn't it? His 100th Premier League game in charge of Crystal Palace. What is he like, again, for people who don't know him? You see him day to day, we see him on the outside. What is he like to work with?
Yeah, no, he's brilliant, you know. It's hard, and I played under a few managers. It's hard for managers to get you know, manage players really, you know, manage players that are not playing, manage players that are playing. And the managers, the gaffer here has got a great way of managing to do that. And he's a lovely man as well. You speak with him off the pitch, and he tells him all his stories, and you know, he's got some great ones. He's got a lot because of a man and went up much experience. So you know, he's a respectable man, and everyone respects him around the place. And you know, he's interested in what he's got to say, and you know, he's just a massive part of, you know, how well we've been doing.
It's amazing, really, at 72 that he's still going as strong as he is, and his mind's still very much in wanting to take a team into the top 10 in the Premier League. But as you say, tapping into his experience, someone who's been all around the world and managed for years and years well before you were born.
Yeah, no, you're right. Whenever he's been, he's done pretty well, let's be honest. And he's come to Palace, and you know, he's given us like a foundation to work from, and really steadied the ship. And you know, everyone wants stability, and he's been our manager obviously for a few years now, and it's nice to have that stability under a manager for a few years. So he's a guy that I can't probably say enough about. And you know, it's not just him, but he's people that he's got with him as well, Ray Lewington and Dean Kiley and Redders as well, that he's been in there through the academy and brought up and worked with the first team now, and he's done brilliantly. So he's got a great team around him as well.
Harriet, could you ask them to turn that music off in the bar, please?
Yeah. Everyone in the Premier League always remembers when it was talked about the Sir Alex Ferguson hairdryer. Has Roy got one of those, or is he always quite chilled with you guys?
I think he has his moments when, I don't know whether you want to call it a hairdryer, but moments at half time or at the end of the game if he feels that we could have done better. You know, he has our expectations of us, and so do we do of ourselves. But you know, he's a few moments where he knows that we could have done better and let us know about it. But I wouldn't know if we'd call it a hairdryer treatment or whatever you want. But but he can also be, you know, a calm influence as well in the change room. So, you know, there's a bit of both which balances out well.
He's of course out of contract in the summer, and there's all sorts of speculation, but you know, Steve Parrish saying he's in talks, and who knows what's going to happen, but you'd like to see him stay if he stayed.
Yeah, for sure. I've really enjoyed playing underneath him, so you know, let take care of itself, but you know, I've enjoyed definitely playing underneath him, for sure.
What's this period like for you guys as footballers going into Christmas? Obviously it's so busy and such an important time for picking up points, but you know, everyone else is thinking about Christmas and you guys are just cracking on. There's no rest, is there?
No, there's games come thick and fast around this sort of time of the year, and you know, so important to get injuries back and people back, because you know, the team gets stretched right out, so it's an enjoyable time in terms of, you know, a lot of football. You know, we love playing football. You know, family time is obviously limited because so many games, so much training, so there's that as well. And it's my boys sort of second Christmas now, so it'll be sort of less time with the family but more time on the pitch, but you know, we can't complain, we enjoy it.
Do you still get that on Christmas Day though? Do you get the Christmas dinner and unwrapping presents with the family, or is it literally back on the training pitch?
Yeah, you can. I just wouldn't go too hard because obviously you've got a game Boxing Day, so you can't. It's not as like you can go full out with a dinner, but you have to bear in mind that these games come round, and you know, you've got to be a professional at the end of the day.
So you've got a healthy Christmas lunch?
Yeah, as healthy as you can have it.
A couple of little extra questions as well that they want to ask you. Your Premier League player of the decade, putting you on the spot.
Premier League player of the decade? Wow. Hard one. Probably say, not necessarily playing now. Right?
Yeah. Anyone in the last 10 years.
So probably Gerrard, I'd say.
And why?
Someone that I looked up to when I was sort of, you know, growing up and obviously playing, and, you know, when I suppose it's been 10 years now since I've been playing for him, but when I was brought up in Gerrard and I sort of played against him and everything, and it was a big moment really for me, because I looked up to him as a kid sort of growing up and just saw his passion as something that I really looked up to.
How tricky was that coming up against him?
Yeah, it's obviously difficult, but it's lucky I don't play midfield, because I would have had more time against him if not. But no, he's just someone I think highly of as a player.
And your Premier League moment of the decade?
Moment of the decade. Probably not myself, but watching the when Aguero scored that goal against QPR to win the league, in terms of a moment, and all that, you know, I can remember Martin Tyler's voice in my head now of when he screamed for when his grower scored. So probably that moment, because obviously that was such a big occasion.
James Tomkins there, and now I've bumped him up the order, he's like a batsman in the England cricket team that can't quite nail down a position. He's only open once, I think. But yeah, no, Statman, we're going to go with him second on the pod this week. And we are not in South London this time. And I think it's going to be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no.
Statman. Statman.
Yes, that's right. We're in the heart of our nation's capital city, London. The beating heart. We're in Soho, in an empty office. Statman, describe our surroundings.
As you say right now, I don't know if anyone can make it sound interesting, an empty office, but that is what we're in. A little mini mixed recycling bin greets us to the left of the door. No chairs or tables. We're very much standing with a window open because it's quite echoey.
Yes, but this window enables us to hear the sounds of London. Isn't it beautiful? And you can see into other offices across the road, across Beak Street. It's quite good. There's a woman down there.
She's see that man's paperwork.
Yeah. God, you can find stuff out.
As he's fudging his taxes.
He is. He's getting his receipts out. What's he doing? He's like, can I get away with claiming that?
One in the pocket, one in the files. He's not looking.
Look at her down there. She's got one arm behind her head. Yeah. and one arm on her phone, and she's got her feet up while she's at work.
I'm still not done with this bloke. He's looking very shiftily every now and then just to make sure people aren't watching him. I think we've spotted a tax fudger here.
He's live on the pod. Over there, sorry, just one more. There's a meeting over there. I'm just going to have a look. They are... Yeah. So they're in a meeting for... We can't say. But, yeah, there's slides. But they're in a meeting and they've got snacks and Prosecco. Or is it Carver? It doesn't look... It's not champagne, but it's some kind of sparkly wine.
I tell you, we go all out here. When we've got a potential top sponsor coming in here for a meeting, we roll out the water bottles with the Crystal Palace logo on. And I always think that's a bit of class, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
They are filled up with tap water, but I still think it looks classy.
Right, should we go back to the window?
Let's go back to the window.
Get rid of this echo.
Just quickly, mate. How awesome is that office to the right? I mean, this will mean nothing to anyone.
It looks like an asylum, but modern, clean. It's quite hospital-like, no?
Yeah, I'm getting a Star Trek vibe, as if that's like...
Yeah, or the film Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. Have you seen that?
Not seen it, but I should if it looks like that. It would interest me.
I liked it. It didn't get very good reviews. It's quite twisted. But anyway.
If Chris Grierson likes it, that's good enough for me.
Right, so I'm a little bit croaky today.
We are. Do you want to explain why?
Well, it was a Christmas party last night.
It was.
In the beating heart of London, Soho.
Yeah. You haven't been to bed, have you? Just rolled out straight to the interview?
No, it's just a bit delicate. I was on the gin and tonics. Other drinks are... I didn't say a brand. Other drinks are available. Yeah. Soft ones, I would recommend.
Yeah, I would do this morning. It didn't have a mix of everything. There was anything and everything available last night. It was a fantastic party.
Well, I know, because I'd had quite a heavy weekend in Spain over the weekend of red wine and beer and other soft drinks.
And other soft drinks, of course. Well, it was one of those. It was one of those events where everywhere you looked, like, there was alcohol available, wasn't it? To your right, to your left, refilling. Fantastic at refilling in that place. Are we allowed to say where it was?
I don't know.
No. it sounds very lewd if we don't.
Yeah, we can. Archer Street.
Yeah.
Soho, it's nice.
Would recommend. Would highly recommend. Where every... So you're there, just to explain that for people that haven't been, and I was shocked the first time I saw this. Don't know if you knew it was coming. Bloke fills up my champagne glass and thinks, yeah, very nice. And like, what's her name? Braces and... it's very much what I imagine Chris Grierson to wear, to be fair. He's got braces, a little bow tie, white shirt. That's a bit of you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean... When you go on to talk about what he did, it is a bit of me.
Right, so he's there, fills up champagne, and I know he goes, sorry, excuse me, sir, puts the champagne bottle down, stands on a bench to the left of me, and whacks out Michael Bublé.
Good singer as well, wasn't he?
Fantastic singer. So much so, I thought they were miming.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Thoughts?
No, I thought it was great. They're clearly out-of-work musical theatre actors, and that's their job in between, which is good.
Yeah.
Because they're at Central London as well. They go to their audition and then they can pop down to work later and serve drinks and sing to a load of obnoxious South Londoners.
You are speaking like a former actor.
I can't say it was too flash though, can we? Because we'll get in trouble and people say, you should be spending that money on players.
Where's our striker?
Get a right back before you give him a gin and tonic.
Blew the budget on Chris Grierson's G&Ts. It was the right level then. The right level of reward for what's been a very successful year for Crystal Palace Football Club.
Yes, it has. It has been a good year.
But what I did enjoy was the moment that Chris Grierson made his arrival. I don't know if you remember this. The dance floor shifted and on he strolled to the tune of Bewitched C'est la Vie.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Did the Irish dance.
Did your Irish dance, which you took me on. And what I will say is I had very big boots on at the time, and it's very hard to lift your legs.
Yeah, I was wearing trainers. I was prepared.
Yeah, I mean, you smashed me. And I could tell that halfway through it wasn't going well. But the more you grew into it, the more confident you got. But it was well executed.
Talk about football. Moving on to football.
Moving on to football.
No, because I was trying to see if you had on your notes, because the last time we spoke was before Burnley. I don't know if you remember my score prediction for the Burnley game.
Oh, right, yeah. Fair play. Sorry, let's bring it back to you. Yes, Chris, what did you predict, oh mighty one?
2-0.
2-0. And how often do you predict a Palace victory?
Every time.
Every time. So how likely is it to eventually come off?
Well, 36% chance. I don't know what our win percentage is.
Probably up there, yeah. Exact score and clean sheet, I thought was impressive. You didn't get sucked in by my stat of they've scored the most goals outside the box. Or they have the most success of shots outside the box. You didn't get sucked into that one. I saw an early goal for them. Long ranger, sneaks through deflection or something like that.
But yeah, they tried a few, but...
Solid as you like. And the centre-backs. Talk to me about the centre-backs.
I can't remember now. I'm really delicate. What happened? What happened with the centre-backs? Scott Dan went off injured, yeah.
But came back. Nice 60.
We've got a never-ending supply, so...
They just keep coming, yeah.
Although Kiate had to play centre-back, didn't he, against... Bournemouth
and did a fine job.
He did.
I tell you what, did you get the... I was away for the Bournemouth game. I do apologise. I meant to be at every home match, but I was away. Niece's birthday, all that. Anyway, I did what a textbook, I imagine, fan abroad does. Had a look at my phone, checked in. It was just before half time. 0-0, 10 men. Brilliant. Bloody blown it. Phone on the floor, go to bed. Very much expecting a comprehensive Bournemouth victory. What a lovely surprise to wake up to in the morning.
It's just sinning. I've always got hope.
Yeah, well, I know you do, because, yeah.
I was saying that when I watched the Spurs game, and it was 4-0 at half-time.
Is this the one that your Bali. Wife had a premonition?
Yeah, that it would be the other way around. I left. I think I said before on the pod. I left, yeah. I was at this park bar, and we had an early flight the next day. It was late at night, because how many hours ahead they are.
I think we might need to edit this bit out. I'm not sure you can say that, really.
I would never leave an actual match, but yeah. I was in a bar in Bali, and it was like midnight. And we were 4-0 down at half time, and I thought, I don't need this. I need sleep tomorrow before the long flight.
So you gave up hope. I mean, you wonder what Newcastle fans would have done when they were 4-0 down to Arsenal. Came back to get that famous 4-4 draw. No?
No. I still had hope. Like, I still checked my phone, like, maybe, but no.
No. Okay. Not to be. Let's roll on quickly then. I just want to chat to you about that Zaha. That Zaha yellow card at Watford, place that, well, when we called them a nothing club, I say we, I think I did, but you strongly agreed, trying to make it a derby, I get the feel now. They absolutely hate us. They hate you.
I hate them. I hate us.
Well, they hate you specifically, as we pointed out last pod, which you can't blame them for, but they hate us as a club.
Yeah, I hate them. They're horrible. But one of our guys turned up at the stadium, and asked where the media centre was, and their employee said, you turn around and you F off.
You're kidding.
No.
You're kidding? Really?
Yeah. They're really up for it.
And he saw that he was obviously a staff member.
Yeah, he was wearing a Palace coat. Yeah.
That's bang out of order. Yeah. Well, we'll show them when they come to ours, will
we? Yeah, we'll show them. I'll take the mick out of one of their kids at half time. But that Wilf yellow, we've got a great angle of it. One of our guys was filming pitch side.
Yeah.
And you can see that the referee is not even looking, that he's looking at the ball.
Yeah.
It happened. So you see the Watford guy slow down on purpose and stick his leg out.
Yeah.
Wilf goes down. The referee isn't looking at it. He's looking at the ball. Turns around, runs away. And then when he looks back and sees him on the floor, he just gets his card out.
Mad.
In yellow.
See, that's mad then. That's absolute negligence from the referee then. Because he didn't go to the line.
I don't know if we can say that.
Oh, am I not allowed to say that?
We can't question the integrity of the referee.
You can't.
We can say that we don't think the decision was right.
Okay,
we
sorry.
We can't say what his reason was. You can say he's negligent, I guess. You can't question the reason why he gave that yellow. You can't say that it's because...
He's biased.
Yes, you can't say that. We're not saying that. We're just saying that someone must have told him.
Okay, okay.
Wink, wink.
Wink, okay. I'd like to say that. I thought it was a dreadful decision. And he didn't also... No one knows my real name on this, so I'm going to carry on and slag him off until the cows come home. But what would have been all right?
When do the cows come home?
That's a great question.
They never come home. Is that where it comes from?
It's a great question. I suppose when they're coming in during the winter. I suppose the cows come home in the winter.
Okay.
I mean, what a ridiculous thing to go out on a limb on. But anyway, cows...
Sometimes they never come home and you eat it.
Here we go. He turns it around. Any opportunity to get veganism in there, he'll take it. Yeah, when do the cows come home? Sorry, we'll set them free. Yeah,
moving on.
We'll set them free. Oh, bloody hell. Anyway.
Panto season.
Right, no, but quickly, if he'd gone to the linesman, check with him, then, you know, at least he's... got eyes on the incident, but he's literally guessed. He's guessed there. Yeah, unless, and off the back of a reaction, he's made a decision. Oh, I'm going to book Zaha.
Unless the linesman said in his ear, I've seen this.
Which, to be fair, they do have headpieces and they can talk to each other.
That could have happened.
But then the linesman
still saw it wrong.
Exactly. Let's move on.
Moving on.
I agree. But before we go on to stats recently, I want to ask you, Mr. Palace, Mr. I was born above which pub?
I wasn't, no. My granddad lived above the Clifton.
Clifton, yeah. That's it. Yeah. I say you were born.
He was a little orphan child.
Yeah. That's a lovely story.
Yeah.
And Crystal Palace raised him. But for Mr. Palace, we're coming to the end of a decade now. I think we might have one more recording. But for you, and we had it on the website, for you, the moment of the decade, or your top three. And it can be you personally. You're being at the club, when you've worked here. Is there a particular moment?
Okay, over
when
the decade.
When you finally got recognition from Alan Pardew, when he slagged you off.
let me think. Top three moments. I know the Sheffield Wednesday one is one. I wasn't at that game. I watched it on TV. It was good, but because I wasn't there, I don't feel it. I would say... Yeah.
Could you not get a ticket?
No, I didn't try. I don't know. I presume it was hard.
It must have been.
It was around a time when I was working in theatre, so I wasn't available on Saturdays.
Here we go. Anytime. Sorry, what were you performing at the time?
But yeah, a lot of the time I was working in box office in theatres as well, so okay. You used to do a lot of Saturdays.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. And Hollyoaks and Emmerdale and the
Yeah,
Bill.
Of course. So, the playoff final.
Yeah.
Coming up because it was just a really nice day.
Yeah.
Because I'd met my wife now at the start of that season, that promotion season. She was a Palace fan.
At the game?
No, I met her at the start of the season. But I went on a blind date with her and asked, are you into football at all? She's like, yeah. I was like, who's your support? She said, Palace. I was like, no way.
He got down on one knee there and then.
So we went to the game, me, my dad and my brother, and her dad and her brother.
Would you ever have been tempted to propose at half time?
No, she wouldn't have said yes. She made it clear from the start, don't ever do anything in a football
stadium. I think that could have been one of the best moments, certainly of halftime entertainment we've ever had.
Yeah, if she said no and slapped me around the face. She wouldn't ever slap me.
No, okay, we'll put that on record. But in between you slagging off the kids, you go and whip that one out. And
yeah. So that top moment, Watford semi-final at Wembley.
Yeah, FA Cup.
Because I was working it. So yeah. I got to run on the pitch at the end and interview players.
I'd love to work at Wembley.
Yeah, that was really special.
Do you have a lap of honour at the end? Is that what you mean? When you were interviewing players, were you walking around?
Walking around. So punching, interviewing him in front of the fans, going mad, and then chasing after Balassi, trying to catch up. BT Sport got on camera, me trying to run after him. that was a top moment. There have been loads, but I'm going to say it just because it's what my programme column's about.
Here we go. Sorry, so many plugs. Sorry, it's like having you on one of those talk shows, and all they do is plug their book.
Yeah, that's me.
Any questions?
My column this week.
Yeah, in your column this week
is about the halftime challenge because we're playing Brighton. So it was Brighton where I said to their fan, little 12-year-old Matthew, you're a Brighton fan. Yeah. Who's your favourite Chelsea player?
Yeah, that was probably one of your greatest moments, to be fair.
Yeah, so that was a good moment of the decade. There's been other better ones. Like, beating Arsenal 3-0 was great. Although,
Crystal, sorry, when I asked Chris Grierson, if you put this in writing, what did Chris Grierson choose for Crystal Palace Football Club's moment
of
the decade?
You told me it was for me.
I know, to be fair.
But Schlupp's goal the other day was brilliant.
Yeah.
Like we haven't celebrated for ages. Up in the PA room, really. Because, look, also with... I know I've supported it, but with VAR, at least with that goal, because he ran from so far, beat everyone and scored, there was no question that it was going to get ruled out. So you could go nuts and not have to go, hold on.
Yeah. It's a good point, isn't it? So solo goals and long-range efforts that go in are going to bring the most pandemonium now.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
Game's changed. Is that enough for me?
That was a lot. Yeah. I mean, you didn't really give me a top three. You just gave me, rattled through your happiest moments. Yeah.
You did say personally, like, I'm not going to say that me talking to a little kid should have been on Moment of the Decade.
That's Chris Grierson absolutely schooled that Brighton kid. That's got to be up there.
Beating Man United was good this season. There's loads.
Yeah, that's fair. But I wonder how high Townsend's folly would have gone up there for you. You weren't there.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it. Just rules it completely out. Didn't exist, didn't happen.
It happened, yeah, but it was not up there for me because I wasn't there.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, thank you anyway. Chris Grierson's Moment of the Decades. Let's roll on. Now, we don't do things by halves. This is the absolute big one. We say it every week, the big one. This is the biggest of big ones, isn't it? For you,
huge.
For us, for everyone, this means the most. Palace v Brighton, and we've got a score to settle. Last year was not pleasant at all.
What happened last year?
They got the double over us.
Oh, God, did they?
I like that you've erased that from your
I remember the away one. I can't even remember what happened at the home one now.
Yeah. The away one, we was robbed, weren't we? There was a potential throw-in that they didn't give. They went and scored from it. Penalty wasn't a penalty.
By half time, it was over. The away one was.
With a red card. Yeah, it was 3-0 against 10 men or something. Yeah. But the home one was when I thought we were on top and Anthony Knockhart out of nowhere.
Oh, God,
one.
Yeah.
PBA.
Oh, I hate Knockhart. I was in the tunnel at the end of that when he came in and he was like, yeah, come on. With his top off, flexing his muscles, and everyone was just rolling their eyes at him.
Good. I hope you rolled as aggressively as you could.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a painful one. And what was horrible about that, it was right in front of the away fans, wasn't it? So a horrible moment, which we need to avenge on Monday Night Football, Sky Sports. Actually, don't watch it on Sky Sports. Tickets very much still available, aren't they?
They are. Although we don't like to promote those tickets still available for our derby, do we?
No, we're not. So they're not available. Wink, wink. it's a sellout. Right, let's move on. So let's talk Brighton then. So we talked about the... nearly lost my paper. We talked about the derby, the double that they got last season, which was unpretty. But we haven't lost consecutive home league games against Brighton since 1983.
I was born.
The year you were born. Well, what a lovely year. So, well, it wasn't because we lost consecutive home matches against Brighton. So we won't put that right this time. But let's look at home form as well, Palace v Brighton. So the last 9 matches at Selhurst Park in all competitions, we've only lost once. The Anthony Knockhart goal. So that's probably why he was in the changing rooms. Not that he would have known that stat. 2 draws and 6 wins out of 9. So actually quite a tied little record against Brighton, which has always really been the case, hasn't it? That's spurred on this whole derby is that we all seem to get one over them, didn't we?
Yeah.
Little old Brighton, and we'd put them in their place.
I'm a little bit, I don't know, it was Watford for me at the moment. let's drum up the excitement.
Grierson's derby. It's been and gone, mate. We've got to let it go. Okay. Let's talk about...
It's his dad's derby, really, isn't it?
It's his dad's derby. What? Yeah.
It's for the dads. Like, it's the 70s and 80s.
Kids as well now, isn't it?
I mean, we beat them in the playoffs.
Yeah. Come on.
I'm going to let people have it.
Yeah. Let's have it, mate. Let's have it. The Monday curse. We've got to talk about the Monday curse. Last 3 Premier League games we played on Mondays. Lost every one of them.
Who were they against, though?
Don't know. Didn't have it down.
Probably quite a tough team.
Probably
quite
good, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, I wish I had that. I would like to know, mate. But yeah, last 3, we've lost them all. Whereas Brighton, reoccurring theme, last 3 in a row on Mondays, drawn them all 2-2.
Wow, that's a stat.
That is a stat. That's why I've used it. So there's you've got the Monday thing come into the equation. Let's talk Palace winning home games. So if we win consecutive home matches, we obviously beat Bournemouth, that Schlupp goal last Tuesday. If we beat Brighton, it will be our first back-to-back consecutive home league wins since almost a year ago exactly. And we beat Burnley and followed it up with a 1-0 win against Leicester. So almost a year to the day, if we beat Brighton, that we get back-to-back home league wins, which would be lovely. And the absolute foundation for me of this Hodgson team, of what we can certainly say, first half of the season has been a successful first half of the season. It's got to be that defence, hasn't it? That absolute... I mean, you see it just how many incredible centre-backs we have. And when a player slots into a position that they don't normally play, Schlupp, fullback, they give it their all, and they all know what they're doing. They all know exactly sort of where to be at which time. And I think it's just absolute foundation for a fantastic defence. So much so that we now have the second most clean sheets in the Premier League, which I love that table. I always think that's one to be proud of. And that's how you measure a successful Hodgson team.
And we're like the third best defence, aren't we? Something like that. I think I was looking up.
In terms of goals against.
Goals against, yeah. We're doing really well on that. Yeah. Not so well on the goals scored.
No, it's always the stat I don't like to wheel out, that we've scored the least Premier League goals at Selhurst Park. But we love scoring them away from home, don't we?
We really do.
Makes for a nice, tight game at Selhurst Park Stadium on Monday night. But let's talk as well, just a little interesting one, or what I hope is interesting. I talked to you about that Burnley one in terms of them having the most success with long-range shots. How many goals do you think we've scored outside of the box this season, Crystal Palace?
We have, outside the box, none.
None. How many have we conceded outside the box?
None.
Absolutely. We're the only team in the league to have this record. So will it end? Will it end on Monday?
No.
No. But who's going to get our first goal from outside the box? It's got to be Milivojevic. I remember that goal.
Oh, you reckon?
Leicester City, the one he... Was it Leicester? Where he banged it in off the post. Yeah. I think he's got it in him.
I reckon Cheku Kuyate is going to score from outside the area. Or James MacArthur.
Yeah.
He nearly did against Bournemouth, Curler.
Yeah, yeah. He's got it in him. Well, we shall see. Could change Monday night. That's a little interesting fact. And this is one that I'm sure you'll be rolling out. What number match is this for Hodgson as Crystal Palace manager in all competitions?
100.
There we go. Phew. We knew. So just looking at his record then at Palace. So... played, coming up to 100, won 37, drawn 23, lost 39. That's not bad, is it? That's not bad at all. I think that's fantastic, really. So he has reached, well, I'm just having a look. He's the third manager to reach the milestone for this club in the 21st century after Ian Dowie and Neil Warnock. My man to watch, I think I'm going to say Glenn Murray, don't you?
Glenn Murray.
Yeah. I'm not going to say Glenn Murray, although he does love to score against us, doesn't he? So I do be worried of him, but a man we've got to be worried about in terms of form, Neil Mopay, if that's how you pronounce it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's a former Brentford forward.
There we go. He's done his research. Scored 6 Premier League goals this season, which is 3 times as many as any other Brighton player. An absolute man in form. So those are the stats. Those are the stats. How does Chris Grierson render them? How does he read them? And what does his prediction off the back of that?
I think...
can I just guess? A Crystal Palace victory from Chris Grierson.
Another clean sheet for Crystal Palace.
Okay.
And I think we will... It's going to be a different game. Mm. But I think we're going to win 3-0.
That is very confident. To squeeze in to one of the moment of the decades with just a few days to spare.
Yeah, we'll have to redo that poll.
Redo. I'm going to go for a very boring 0-0.
Okay.
Get your tickets now.
Yeah. Premium seats are available.
Premium seats are available.
Plus fat.
Yeah, plus fat.
Okay, right. Thank you very much.
Who's on the pod?
I don't know.
Shouldn't have asked you. I'm sure it's going to be a great pod.
There's a Premier League interview, but it's happening tomorrow.
Okay.
At the moment, it's Tompkins and Townsend doing it, but I don't know whether they still are.
Brilliant.
Because sometimes it changes at the last minute. So they could be on it. Rob Street of the under-23s and under-18s, he chatted to the programme editor this week. I don't know if we're putting that in because that was for the West Ham programme, but he might let us have the audio now. Brandon Pierrick, who signed a new contract, first professional deal, might have him. Roy Hodgson's press conference.
I like how one of my friends said his feedback was, he likes how you thought on the spot and changed the whole running of the programme a few programmes ago. Like, oh, no, I can't fit that. No, we'll delete that very much. We'll delete that now. So,
I can do what I want.
This is the power, unfortunately, that Chris Grierson has got now in 2019. He's got his own column. He chooses himself for the moments of the decade and he does what he wants on the pod. Christopher Grierson.
Out of control.
Out of control.
Right, turn me off. Bye. Hope you enjoyed the sounds of Central London in that stat man this week. I will always predict a Palace win, I think, in every game because I always want my prediction to come true. So when I watch a game, as well as wanting Palace to win, I just want to be right. Okay, right, moving on from Statman, we have... let's cover the youth team now, or the academy. So, as I said earlier, I was at the FA Youth Cup game against Reading at the Medeski Stadium. It was an incredible game. 2 goals for Brandon Averro, Rob Street got one, and Malachi Boateng scored as well. The game was so fast. It was end-to-end football the whole time. So in the next round, I highly recommend you tune in to watch the stream. Afterwards, I spoke to a very happy Paddy McCarthy. Paddy, how proud are you of the boys after that performance?
Yeah, extremely proud. We knew it was going to be tough here. We knew we'd be tested. I thought 2-1, they were all exceptional tonight and they got what they deserved in the end, which was a result and on to the next round. So I'm delighted for the lads. I think this group has some exceptional individuals. And it's a group that should really have won more throughout the years, but I'm delighted for them that they've got some success tonight and hopefully that they continue individually and collectively.
Such a variety of goals this evening, but that front four of yours, so exciting to watch.
Yeah, listen, when they're on song and when they're combining and when they're moving the ball, they're so difficult to play against for any opposition. And I think what they've done off the ball as well, their movement was excellent tonight. Their desire to press, to track runners in wide areas. And these are the sort of things that we're trying to teach them on a daily basis and trying to drill into them, because they're going to be the expectations at the next level when they do eventually. But there's no doubt in their talent. I mean, they're exciting to watch for everybody, me included, on a daily basis. And yeah, it's a fantastic group of individuals, and when they come together as a team like they did tonight, they'll cause anybody problems.
A couple of great counter-attacking goals, but the one from the free kick in the first half, has that worked on at the training ground?
Yeah, we do set plays. Most weeks we're pretty consistent with them. Again, it's a massive part of the game. There's a high percentage of goals at all levels scored from set plays, so it's important for the lads that as part of their development that they learn how to deal with them defensively and how to go and score goals off them. So it was a training ground move. Worked by Dougie Wright and Darren Powell, so I'm delighted for them because they worked their socks off as well, and there were a little celebration by them too as well, so it was great for everybody.
And a great free kick goal from Brandon Averro.
Yeah, I've not taught him how to do that. That's just individual brilliance, to be able to whip the ball in from that area, and that's the talent that these lads have. And once they get the other side of the game, which they will when they mature, and you've seen it out there that they're willing to do it on big occasions. Once they get that consistency, they'll all have successful careers.
We would have had a few people watching on the stream for the first time today, watching this team. Is it always this end-to-end and this pace, or is it because it's a knockout game?
Yeah, no, we knew Reading. Reading are an expansive team. They're an attacking team, and we knew even at 2-0. I watched them against Spurs last week, and they were 2-0 down at half-time, and came back and won that game 3-2. So they're a good attacking outfit. So we knew even at 2-0 the game wasn't over, and I spoke about that before the game. So the lads weren't expecting it to be over at 2-0, because Reading are a fantastic attacking team. But we showed resilience, we showed heart, we showed desire, we showed quality, all the major things that you need to go and win a football game. So the lads bounced back from the disappointment of conceding two goals, but I'm glad I highlighted it throughout the week, and I'm glad I seen them do that exactly sort of thing last week against Tottenham, because the boys were prepared and they rolled their sleeves up and went again. And I think second half controlled the game.
Thanks, Paddy.
Lovely, thanks.
Cheers, well done.
Thank you.
Paddy McCarthy there, and a man who had a very good game against Reading. Brandon Pierrick, he went on a great run to set up Rob Street for the third goal. Check it out, it's on social media. The highlights are on YouTube as well as the Palace app. He signed his very first professional contract this week on his 18th birthday. He's been training with the first team loads, so hopefully he'll get a chance at some point this season. But I spoke to him just after he'd signed his contract. Brandon, how does it feel to have signed your first professional contract with the club?
Feels good. It's a great feeling to sign on my birthday. But most importantly, I'm looking forward to kicking on and playing football, just doing my thing.
It's been a great season for you so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've been trying to get some more goals in my game, which I've been doing. So that's mainly the main goal for me, to get more goals.
For those that don't know much about you, like, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Brixton. Yeah, I grew up in Brixton when I was younger, and then I've been moving houses. I moved from Croydon, Fulton Heath, but now I live in West Norwood.
It's a proper South London boy.
Yeah.
How great is it to be playing for a proper South London team?
It's a great feeling, because obviously the stadium is not too far from where I live, so if I have a game there, it doesn't take me long to get there, and it doesn't take me long to get to training, so where I live isn't far from anything, really.
How much does it mean to you to be able to say that you're a professional footballer?
I've been waiting for some time. But yeah, it's a great feeling, and like I said, to also sign on my birthday tops it off.
Now, what kind of player are you? Everyone's probably seen you play already, but let's pretend no one has.
I like to say I'm very direct, quick and powerful. Those are the main two, quick and powerful.
What coaches at Palace have kind of been great for you over the years?
David Cooper, that's where it all started off. David Cooper, Paddy and Sorsi, but Sorsi's left, so them three have really helped me get to where I am now, I'd say.
So what age were you when you joined Palace?
I think I was under nines, yeah, and I've been here ever since.
So back then, obviously, Palace were a championship club.
Yeah.
Has it been pretty special to see how the club's grown since you've been in it?
Yeah, because I've been there for so long, so I've seen so many things happen to this club. But yeah, the next step is obviously first team, so I'm just waiting for my time.
Yeah, you've trained with the first team already, yeah. Haven't you? How's that been?
It's been a step up from what I'm used to, but it's good to get some elements of their training into my game. So yeah, it's always helping me progress.
Is it a different kind of training with the first team? Because obviously in the academy and in the 23s, you're still developing.
Yeah.
So I guess you work on a lot more technique and stuff. And then when you're doing first team training, you're helping them prepare for the games.
Yeah. I think it's just different all round, as in the players that I'm training with. Because like in the 18s and 23s, there's some places where you can hide on the pitch or even on the training pitch. But when you step onto the first team pitch, there's no hiding places. Like you will get found out if you make any mistakes. So I think that's helped me a lot to stay focused during games and training.
What kind of hard times have you been through so far as a footballer?
I've had a lot. I've been sent home from training. I've had a lot. I've had times where I thought I wasn't gonna get to where I am now. But obviously I've persevered through it, so I'm just happy. I'm happy to be where I am.
And first team players that you play with, which ones especially like look after you and chat to you during training and help you through it?
To be honest, everyone's friendly, but I say the ones that proper take an interest is Gyro, Andros, Mama. The French lads take interest, because obviously I speak French, so it's good to communicate with them a lot.
Oh, you speak French as
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So what's your family history? Where does the French come from?
My family's from Cameroon, so that's a French-speaking country. And obviously there's a lot of French speakers in the first team, so they know that I speak French, so obviously they communicate with me in French. So it's easier. I find it easier to get along with them.
And what's the future hold for you in the next couple of years?
Wait and see, but I should be playing. I'm hoping to play first team very soon. Hoping to get my debut very soon.
Brandon Pierrick there. And now we're going to finish things off with Roy's press conference. Apologies to those of you that do watch the live stream of the press conference. We haven't done the past 3, I think it is. It's for various reasons. They've been scheduled at later in the day because the players or the manager have been going on to do other events in the evening, like certain like junior member Christmas parties, that kind of thing. But yesterday's, or whenever you're listening to this week's one, clashed with us having all of our streaming equipment in Reading for the Youth Cup. That's why that one wasn't live streamed. And the two before that, it was a similar thing. There was an under-23s game at the same time as one that we were streaming, and then the other one, we just had so many things on at the same time. But luckily, we get sent it on from other people. So here is Roy Hodgson's press conference.
Hello again, Roy. In terms of the injury news, any progress, Patrick Van Aanholt and Jeffrey Schlotten?
No, those two won't be available. Joel Ward, of course, is not available. Mamadou Sakho is suspended, so certainly those ones. But unfortunately, there's one or two other players that might get added to that list, but I'm not prepared to discuss that here now.
Okay, a couple of other injuries, did you say, as well?
Possible.
In terms of Schlupp, how long do you think it's going
to be? Don't know. The doctors are not very willing to put timescales on injuries, but it's going to keep him out for a period of time, certainly. I mean, there's no question of him just missing this one game and then bouncing straight back. But how long it will be, I don't know. We obviously hope as little time as possible, but we'll have to wait and see.
It's a hip injury, is it?
Yeah.
What's the nature of it?
I don't go into that either, because every time I mention those things, the doctors tell me that I haven't got it exactly right, and they don't like that. And what's more, I find it hard to understand why your viewers will find it interesting to know the exact medical details around the injury also. So I don't think it's of any interest to anybody except the medical staff and Jeffrey himself.
And what about Van Aanholt? Any return date for him yet?
No return date, but he's very keen to get back as soon as possible, and he's working hard to that end. But again, I'll have to wait and see how his rehabilitation progresses, and really we are very much in the hands of the medical staff in that respect, because with muscle injuries the date when a player returns is of vital importance, because we see so often a player coming back from an injury only to get injured again because the muscle hasn't quite recovered as people would like.
And how difficult do these injuries make the next few weeks, this Christmas period, for you?
Yeah, they make it harder, that's for sure. But we've been through a period where we've been very fortunate. And in fact, in many areas of the field, we've been pretty much blessed with almost a surfeit of riches. So this is a totally different situation. And when the injuries have come, they've come and hit us with a vengeance. But I'm afraid that during a long season of, 45 games or so, it's going to happen to you. So we'll have to make certain we navigate our way through this period of time. We still have 11 good players to put on the field each game, and the pressure on them to really perform maybe gets that bit greater when there's no one sitting on the bench perhaps to take their place.
And Joe Ward, any progress? Any update?
Well, he's progressing as he should, but I mean, I think the original prognosis for his injury was it was going to be a long one. It's only 3 weeks ago, is it, perhaps, it happened? And I think the prognosis was considerably longer than that. So he's doing all he can and is going in the right direction. But again, we won't be seeing him over the Christmas period, which I guess is the period which interests us all here now, because who knows what January, February and March have got to bring.
In terms of Monday night in Brighton, it's a big rivalry between the clubs.
Yeah.
Is it a rivalry that you and the players understand, that motivates you?
Oh, yes. We work for the club, and I think whenever you work for a club, you very quickly immerse yourself in the culture of that club, and for me in particular, going back a long way with the club, of course, I have no difficulty understanding it. But even the foreign players that come in, it doesn't take them very long when they're a Crystal Palace player to understand that the Brighton game is one of the highlights of the season and one of the most important games of the season for everybody at the club, not least of all the fans. So there'll be no concern for me in that regard, that the players will know what they're up against, know how important the occasion is, and know how important it is that they really pull out all the stops.
And given that and the feisty atmosphere you can get, how important can the home fans be to you on Monday night?
Well, the home fans are always important here. I think that's well documented. And, when you're a beneficiary of their support, you can't say often enough how grateful you are for how well they get behind the team. I thought the last game we played at home against Bournemouth was a really classic example of a crowd getting behind its team to really help that team, if you like, compensate for the fact they play with 10 men for the best part of the game. But they'll be aware too of the importance of this game, but I'm expecting them to be as vociferous and as supportive as ever, and I'm expecting them, of course, to behave correctly as they always do.
Yeah, you mentioned that a few unsavoury incidents at the weekend. How important is it for the game that line isn't crossed?
Well, of course it is, but there's not so much that we managers can do about that other than deplore bad behaviour and to encourage the clubs, when something happens like that, to take the necessary measures. And that happens. I'm afraid human beings are human beings, and we can't talk to 60, 65,000 people and get each of them on the same track as we are ourselves, but we can fight as hard as we possibly can to make certain it doesn't happen and hope that crowds come to football matches for the right reasons, i.e. to really enjoy the game of football and to enjoy the spectacle that the players are providing.
Do you think clubs are doing enough generally to stamp out?
That's not my field. My field is talking about Crystal Palace Football Club and the players and what the authorities can do and how well they're doing it. I'll leave that to the people who are involved in it.
This will be your 100th game in charge of Crystal Palace. Where do you feel you're at? Where do you feel the club's at in terms of your journey and the progress you've made?
I've been very happy here, very happy with the way things have gone during those 99 games. Very pleased with the support I've received from the club and the players. I think that we've certainly performed to the level that we can be expected to perform to. Possibly, I would even suggest we've sometimes performed a little bit higher than perhaps we could have been expected to perform to. So I'm more than satisfied, and I'm very happy to be celebrating 100 games with the club. That's a good record these days, I think, with any Premier League club, but I'm hoping it will go beyond the 100 too.
I know you're in negotiations over your contract, but do you see yourself here for a few more seasons continuing the work that you've done?
I don't tend to look too far ahead. I don't know that there's any manager really that should be looking too far ahead in today's current climate, but certainly the way I feel at the moment, I'm very happy with my life, very happy with the way my working life is panning out, so I see no reason to envisage a stop to that, so we'll see what happens.
And finally for me, just in terms, I guess if there's one thing that stands out this season, perhaps it's a lack of goals from your perspective. Is that an area you want to see improve?
Of course, but I only want to see it improve if the defensive record could stay the same. I think we've got 6 clean sheets already this season, which is fantastic. We've had 3 in the last week. So I tend to prefer to praise the team for that rather than bemoan the fact that we haven't scored as many as we would have liked. But I do think we've got players in the team who are capable of scoring goals. We certainly aren't a particularly defensive team. I think we defend well when we lose the ball, like all teams try to do. Leicester are the only team I think that have let in less goals than us, but they don't do that themselves by being particularly defensive. They attack as well, which we do. But of course, I would like to see us score more goals, and everybody knows that's something we need. The players who play up the front are aware of the pressure to do that, and we do everything we can to help them. But I believe the goals will come. But if they're not going to come, as long as we keep our defensive record as good as it is, I'm still sure we'll have a good season.
Will it strike in January help?
I don't think there are many clubs either. You're always asking me questions which I think all managers will give you the same answer. I don't think there'll be too many that say no, a new forward coming into the club to help us out doesn't interest me at all. So I'll just put myself in the same category as all the others.
Thank you.